Hi everyone, welcome to StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. I'm Annie Ranking, a family resource specialist, and I am here today with Marissa Klein. Welcome, Marissa.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so to start with, can you just introduce yourself as part of this series for families and professionals that we're putting on?
Sure. My name is Marissa Klein. I am a board certified behavior analyst in Central Illinois. I currently work for a special education association for several counties in the area. And I provide consultation services in those areas to teachers who have individuals with special needs in their classroom that are struggling or just need a little extra support. And I've been doing that since 2016. As a certified behavior analyst, but before that, I've been working as a one-on-one direct therapist for several years.
And for our listeners, can you tell us kind of what led you to go down this career path?
Absolutely, yeah. My brother actually was diagnosed with Asperger's when he was about 2.5, in like 1990. And I saw everything that he went through, all the services that he had growing up, some of the struggles that my mom had in raising him and trying to find help and even a diagnosis at first for him. And it really drove me to try to do whatever I could to make services better as much as I could in all areas. I've seen him go through now that he's older, everything from school to vocational, trying to find a job. And I just wanted to see if I could do anything to help other individuals that have to go through some of the things that he had to go through.
Thank you for sharing about your family and your kind of career path. For this next question, I'm wondering if you'd like to share or what stories you'd like to share about growing up with a sibling who was diagnosed with Asperger's autism, and then also as your career as an ABA therapist.
Sure. When I was really little, I did not know what my brother was diagnosed with. I did not really know why he was different. All I knew as a young child was that he could not go to the same school that I could. He actually ended up needed to be bused about an hour away from our home to go somewhere that had a special education department because the private school that I was going to did not offer that service. And I also just knew that when I would try to play with him, he wasn't particularly interested in playing with me or doing the things that I liked to do. But he had very specific interests in playing video games at the time, mostly. And so he would do that for hours on end. And he also was unable to speak for a lot of the time when I was very young. Luckily, he got into therapy as he got older. Probably about 7 or 8 years old, I want to say, we got a therapist to come to our house and do therapy with us, and we were very lucky to have that. You know, this was a long time ago in the 90s when it was brand new, and so my parents actually found a college student that was interested in learning about what to do for autism, and they paid for her to take some courses so that she could deliver the therapy for my brother. And she was phenomenal. I remember her even, you know, from only knowing her when I was really young. And she was able to help him to the point where he can speak in full sentences now. He's doing really great. But I remember, you know, it was just difficult growing up having a brother with this. He would have tantrums a lot. So my mother a lot of times would not have friends of mine come over to our house. I think just because she was unsure probably how to handle if he was yelling a lot or if he were to become aggressive in any sort of way. And so she really encouraged for me to play outside or go to other people's houses. And he also would have tantrums kind of at inopportune times. There's no really good time to have a tantrum, I suppose, but we'd be out doing something fun, or I'd be going to dance class, or we'd go to the movies and he'd have a tantrum, and sometimes we would end up having to leave or something bad would happen. And so I had a lot of anger, I guess, or resentment maybe when I was younger, not understanding what he was going through and what he had. All I knew at the time, I suppose, was kind of my own young child selfish needs of, I really wanted to see this movie and I didn't get to see it because of him. And so that took, you know, a while to get over and to grow and learn about what he had. And luckily, you know, I did. And now as an adult, we have a great relationship, and he's able to do a lot of things, and I make time to go with him places and go see movies and do things he likes. But it was difficult at times growing up, and we'd have issues occur. Like, we were on vacation one time, and I remember that he was physically aggressive towards me, and it was mainly, I found out, because I had said something that upset him with some sensory issues that he has. And so we were able to identify that that had triggered the incident. But I just remember it being hard. There was always something going on where we had to make accommodations throughout our life for things specific to him. So sensory issues, diet was another. He was very restrictive in what he would eat. And so a lot of times we would end up going to eat at McDonald's, or we would go to eat somewhere else where they had food that we knew he would eat, that he enjoyed. And so there was just a lot of things going on that didn't make sense for a little kid at the time that didn't know why we were doing those and making those accommodations.
And did your mom have a conversation with you at a certain age? Was it a realization for you? I guess one of the questions that our listeners may have is kind of, how old were you when you kind of accepted and or knew that this was part of your family and this was something that you were going to problem solve through?
I remember that I probably was in middle school when I saw that he was taking medication. And so there was medication out on the counter, and I didn't know why. And so I picked up the bottle, and I saw his name on it, and I saw what it was. And I remember kind of trying to figure out why, what that medicine did. What did it do? Why would he take that? And I remember having a conversation at that point with my mom. And that's kind of where we had a real discussion about everything that was going on. But it really took that long for it to be a formal conversation. You know, I had been with him and my mom when we would go to the doctor's appointments. I'd been to speech therapy with him, but we had never really talked about why he needed it until that point. And so we really started opening up and talking about it, I feel like, in middle school and a lot more throughout high school. To the point that once I went to college, I knew that I wanted to get into this as a field.
And so from the experiences of growing up with your brother and some of the experiences that you've shared with us, how has that influenced you in your career?
I think it's given me a great perspective. When I go in, I, you know, have that personal experience behind me, and I understand some of the juggling things that are happening behind the scenes, I guess, with the parents and the family. And I understand how much they have on their plate already as far as doctor's appointments, programs to follow, special things that they are trying to do. And so it helps me to give them a realistic plan of what to work on with their child at home, so that I don't give too much, or that I'm not expecting them to do a lot and then getting upset if they can't get it all done. I have a better idea of what's feasible to ask to work on. But I think that the experience just has made me very patient and understanding, and that I don't judge and that nothing really bothers me. So it's helped me connect better, I think, with parents when I go to speak to them. Because usually if it's a parent that has a child with a newer diagnosis and they see me for the first time, if the child is loud or not following directions, they'll apologize a lot and they'll say, oh, I'm so sorry. And I tell them, you know, you have nothing to be sorry about. None of this is shocking or strange. You know, I've seen it all. You know, you just relax and let's talk about what we can do to try to put in some supports to help you and your child. So I think it's given me a lot of patience and a lot of perspective to be able to help much better than I could have if I had not had that experience.
Yeah, it sounds like a great benefit for the families that you work with. That's excellent. So for the last question, I kind of am going to ask it in two parts. So for the first part, if you could talk to like your younger self, or for young children and families, or for families who are listening to this who have younger children who don't know how to talk about the disability of siblings in their family, or don't know how to have those conversations, what are some things that you wish you would have known as a child, or wish your hindsight's 2020, wish your parents or your family might have done when you were younger, kind of figuring out the situation and the experiences you had with your brother?
I think that there's two things that kind of stick out to me. One, I would love for somebody to either have made them long ago or have told me when I was older that there are support groups out there. I did not know, honestly, until I was an adult and I started working for a company, that there were support groups out there for siblings of children with different diagnoses, but specifically autism groups. And I think that if I had that access to that, or had known about that, if it existed when I was younger, that would have been great to see other children who had a family that looked like mine and that was going through the same sort of struggles, so that I'd have a group to talk about it with and vent with some of my frustration, because some of it is frustrating, but I don't feel like it was fair of me to be frustrated, because my brother wasn't trying, obviously, to upset anyone. He was just being himself. So the second part of that is just wishing that there was some sort of other educational component, maybe within a support group or within just having my family take me to the psychologist with them and have the psychologist talk to me and let me know what was going on. Because, you know, hindsight is 2020, and looking back, I can think of memories that I had where I didn't want to talk to my brother because he did something that upset me and it wasn't his fault. He had no control over it, or he wasn't trying to do something to me. You know, if he had taken something of mine or hit me, or just even the simplest things of wondering why he wouldn't talk to me, you know, not understanding as a young child that he could not speak to me, or, you know, having somebody develop a communication system for the two of us so that I could communicate with him at a very young age would have been wonderful. But, you know, I don't think in the 80s and the early 90s that necessarily anyone had those answers yet.
Right. And then in your role as a professional, what do you hope kind of families understand if they are preparing to see, if they're preparing to see an ABA professional, and what are some of the things for them to expect and not kind of be nervous about it, but just some of those expectations?
Yeah, ABA is wonderful. And I think some of the things that they should know going in is that depending on who you talk to, you'll have a different amount of time that they'll want you to have your child in therapy. Some people get kind of a sticker shock if they go into an ABA therapist and they're told to come in for more than an hour a week. If a child is struggling with communication or has other significant needs that need to be met, It's very common to have someone come in for 10, 20, up to 40 hours a week of therapy. And so that's something to be aware of, is that you, if you are seeking out ABA therapy, it's not a traditional therapy. It's where you will go talk to somebody for an hour or two a week or a month. It is a time commitment, but that it has enormous benefit. And it incorporates the parents too. So much so now that insurance is really requiring, if you want insurance to pay for ABA therapy, that the parents get involved. So there is a component in there where the parents will be expected to come to classes to get education, training, or guidance on what they can do at home, or what they can talk to the child's teachers about to do at school to help support the new skills that they're learning. But it's enormously beneficial, and we can usually catch children up very quickly to where they need to be successful at school, if they come to ABA early and for a fairly intensive amount of time. But we work on everything. We work on speech, the food aversions, if they have any academic issues or having issues with organization and executive functioning skills, so being able to wait for certain periods of time. But we also definitely focus on getting them classroom ready. So if they need help with routine, and knowing how to follow simple directions and get their items like their backpack ready for school and packed, we can focus on all of that. So I would highly encourage anybody that has a child who's struggling, who has autism, or any other ADHD diagnosis, for instance, ABA is something that's really helpful and is covered by most insurances now.
Excellent. Well, I learned something new. I had not really, I guess, investigated ABA all that much before. So that was really interesting. Thank you for sharing that information. And I'm sure it's beneficial to families listening.